Good morning, I'm Faye Ruscoe. You're listening to BBC Five Live and Up All Night, and you still have got time to get your tech questions in for Fevzy. It's 3:05, so you've got 25 minutes left. 0808 5 909 693, or you can text 850 58. So let's try and get through some of these questions, because they're starting to build up now, Fevzy. That's all right. We like full answers. Andy in Worsley says, what's the verdict on the S8? Is there a better alternative? This is the new Galaxy phone.
Yeah, it's lovely. So this is Samsung's comeback phone after they'll hate me for saying it, but after the Note 7 was bursting into flames and all that. Look, Samsung makes, technologically speaking, makes some of the best phones out there. The S8 is technologically more advanced than the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus, the current Apple flagships. They are arguably, I mentioned before the Google Pixel phone. I think the S8 is even better than that, in my view, although, you know, there are some areas where the Pixel is still better. It's fantastic. I wouldn't have any worries about trusting Samsung, because first of all, they weren't the manufacturer of the batteries that had the problem, but they were very good. You see, any company can have this sort of problems, and many companies have had similar problems, and also laptop companies, you know, the batteries in those have caused problems, as well as, you know, all sorts of other manufacturers. So this is not unique to Samsung. But what Samsung did that really impressed me was they recalled the phones very quickly. They put their hands up very quickly. They accepted the blame. They didn't just say, oh, we don't manufacture the batteries. What they said is, we don't manufacture the batteries, but we were the ones that gave them the specifications, and probably we were just trying to eke a little bit too much battery out of the space that we had, because one of the things that went was the amount of insulation around the battery was reduced to make more space. So there was a design issue there. I would think that they've really learned their lesson, and I would say that from a battery point of view, I wouldn't have any reason to worry about them any more than any other firm, and probably less given the experience that they've had. It's cost them so much money. They're going to have made belt and braces to make that battery as safe and secure as they can. So in terms of battery, I wouldn't have an issue. In terms of the phone itself, it's a beautiful phone. If you want an Android phone, then that will be one of the best phones to go for. The Google Pixel has the benefit over the S8 in that it is what they call stock Android. It's pure Android, and there isn't an extra layer of skunky software on top of it, which manufacturers like Samsung put. It's completely standard, and that makes it easier to use, and it also means that you get the updates more quickly.
Yeah. Fevzy, what is it that stops people switching between brands of phones? So somebody who's always had, for example, an Apple phone, is it loyalty? Is it fear? Or is it just how to use it, you don't want to learn something else?
People like what they know, generally. If it does a good enough job, they don't want to change. Also, don't forget, particularly Apple users tend to spend a fair bit of money on apps. And those apps will work on their iPad and their iPhone. And also, so if they then go to Android, let's say, an Android handset, those apps won't work anymore. Even though there might be an Android version of the app, they might have to repurchase it. Usually they would. So that's a pain, and learning how to use it is a pain. And thirdly, I think people are tribal. So, you know, once you're in the Apple camp, you tend to stay there. Although some people have jumped ship from Apple, in that Apple has a number of benefits, you know, in terms of the quality of the apps and the quality of the hardware. But technologically speaking, the S8 is more advanced. Its screen technology is more advanced than Apple's. Apple is kind of playing catch up on the hardware front. Apple, I guess, would argue, you know, it's not about having bleeding edge technology. It's about, you know, the best user experience. And that's true. But if you're spending the better part of £1,000 on a phone, you know, you really want the bleeding edge technology as well.
It is unbelievable that we spend that amount of money on a phone, isn't it? Remember when a phone used to cost 20 quid?
Yeah, but it's also, I think the way to look at it, it's true, but
of
the way
course, yeah.
the way to look at it is, it's a mobile computer
of course it is.
That happens to make mediocre phone calls.
Yeah.
And they don't even do it really well.
You're not paying for the phone calls anymore, are you?
No, your £20 phone will probably make and receive better call quality than the £1,000.
But your recommendation for Andy and Worsley would be, you know, there isn't a better alternative as far as you can see.
The only thing I'd look at is the Google Pixel phone, because it's got that stock Android, which means that it's going to have a longer useful life, because Google will continue to produce. So when you get this, the Samsung version, you don't just wait for Google to produce a new version of the operating system. You have to wait for Google to do that and for Samsung to stick their version of the software on top of it. And sometimes they don't make it available.
OK, let's go to a call now. Peter in East Sussex. Peter, what's your question?
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Cool. The problem I've got is that when I upload a small movie, like just a movie short, like I make movies of sceneries, scenes, skies, sunrises, etc., something like that, and then I'll put music to it. But when I upload it on my desktop to Google Drive, it is playable on my phone and on my tablet, but it will not play on my desktop.
Ooh, that's a frustrating problem, Peter.
Yeah, so
from what I've gathered, looking at a couple of forums, I'm not the only one that's got this problem.
Yeah, it's probably a problem. I mean, it's hard. This could be many things, but my guess is it's probably to do with the format of the file, that the media player that you're using may not support on your desktop PC.
Right, what I do is, with my camcorder, I record in either AVC HD or MP4.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to put it onto Google Drive, I will use MP4. If it's on AVC HD, then I've got a format converter, which I will then change it to MP4.
I understand.
MP4 seems to be more suitable.
Peter, what I would do is try a different media player on your desktop computer. So something like VLC Media Player, for example, is pretty good at supporting lots of different formats. If you're not,
I've got the movie and TV player, and also the Windows Media Player.
Yeah.
But it offers me a choice of, would you like to choose another app?
Yeah.
And then it doesn't give me an option.
Well, you may not have another app that's suitable for video playback. So that, would you like to choose another app? That's a Windows feature.
But it doesn't give me an option to go or look for VLC.
No, it won't give you. It will only give you the option of apps that are already installed on your computer. So my advice to you is download a free version of VLC Media Player, and try that, because that supports a very wide range of formats, or codecs as it's known. So I would try for that. And then if you want to make sure it plays via VLC, then the way to do it is open VLC and then open the file from within that software. It may also do it the other way, you know, where it says, would you like to use another one? At that point, it should then give you the choice of VLC Media Player. My guess is that will probably solve the problem. It's probably just an issue with
the code. That would be great, because I'll get a preview photo of a little movie.
Yeah.
But I can't tell the quality of the, you know, how good it is when I want to send it to people I know, friends, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you reckon VLC?
Yeah, there are others, but VLC is you know, one of the best multi-format media players, in that it supports many different formats.
Yeah.
So that would be the way to go. And in any event, I think, Peter, I think VLC is a useful tool. Most people should probably have it on their system anyway, just to be there as a part of their toolkit.
Brilliant. Peter, thank you so much for calling us. Let's take another question from Daniel in Manchester. Daniel says, Fevzy, I have an Echo Dot and several Sonos speakers. I can stream music via Bluetooth from my Android phone to the Echo Dot. The Echo Dot is wired into my TV surround speakers, but I want to connect the Echo Dot to the Sonos speakers so they play the music from my phone. Is this possible? If so, how? If it's not, do you think it will be possible in the future?
So Sonos are a manufacturer that produce very high-end, very good quality, very expensive speakers. So you're talking about several hundred pounds for each speaker and it's quite addictive. You know, you start buying them and that you know, people save up for them, and every year they add another one in another room. because of all of that, it's Sonos is not open. It's a sort of closed standard, and they try not to let you sort of integrate it with others because they like to sell you their speakers. So if there is a way around it, I'm afraid I don't know. It's not designed to do that. There may be a way around it. It would need a bit of research, but the short answer is I don't think so. But it's something that we could research and look at. I'm sorry, I've forgotten that listener's name.
Now you're asking me. Daniel in Manchester.
If Daniel would like to leave his email address or like to, you know, catch up with me on Twitter or something, then I can probably look into it a bit further and look at the details of that particular setup. By the way, Daniel, that's already quite a sophisticated setup you've got there, and the more sophisticated it gets, the more unstable it's likely to become as well, and particularly trying to get into Sonos equipment. My feeling is that there are devices now that are almost as good as Sonos in terms of, you know, the software, but allow you to use existing speakers and existing amplifiers. And I'm a great fan of not sort of throwing away what you've got, but just sort of repurposing it as far as you can. If people are starting from scratch, I would actually say go for something like, you know, an adapter, either, you know, the Google adapter or one from Kitsound or something like that, and add it to existing kit, because some people have got excellent speakers and amps already. Some of them are decades old and they lack the sort of modern digital bells and whistles, but those can be, you know, added on, as it were. So that's quite a nice way of doing it, and it's much cheaper doing it that way. But if you've got an existing Sonos system, then, you know, come back to me about it and I'll look into it.
Well, Richard's actually texted us, and Richard says, I have a 1970s Bang & Olufsen system which runs all my TV sound, etc. Everyone who hears it can't believe it's from a 45-year-old system. I can't recommend that course of action highly enough, he says.
Yeah, you know what? Things change. You know, you remember when the iPod came out? Mm. Prior to the iPod, people who were into music were into quality, you know, and it was all about, you know, what is the best quality I can get of my sound. And then with the launch of the iPod, we moved from quality to quantity. I can now fit this many songs. I can fit my entire music collection. I can have access to every song in the universe via this streaming service. But sometimes the quality of the sound is similar to that of a cassette tape. And we've sort of, some of the speaker systems and the headphone buds that come with phones and so forth, and the tiny tinny speakers we get are really, really poor. So sometimes there's this really great synergy that you can get by using old audio kit, old amps, old speakers that were built for quality, but just sort of retrofit them with a sort of modern boost of having, you know, digital inputs. And as I say, there are all sorts of devices that you can use to do that. Google do one, Kitsound do one. There are others as well. And that's a great way of, you know, breathing new life into really old kit, but getting a better result as a result of it. Because a lot of these, I mean, it's by no means always true, but many of these all-in-one speaker / Bluetooth systems that you get, you know, they've got the tech, but they're poor on the audio size because they're built down to a price, and then nothing is as well made as it was 40 years ago anyway. So, you know, the fact that that speaker and amp and so forth is still working after 40, 45 years is testament to its build quality.
Sorry to interrupt. We've got loads of text flashing in front of my eyes.
Sorry.
Let's try and get some more in before half past 12 minutes, Vevsy. Let's see if we can get at least four in. Ella says, I'm always amazed at what I learn from your programme. I think she means yours, Vevsy, not mine, by the way. She says, thank you, but please can you recommend a stick that I can buy that will give a good movie selection for myself and my 13-year-old son? We both love watching films. I'm on a budget and have my internet through TalkTalk.
Okay. Well, you mentioned sticks. So there are two types of devices, that streaming devices that turn dumb TVs into smart TVs. You've got the sticks that plug directly into one of the sockets in the back. It's called an HDMI socket. Those sticks, although they're convenient and neat and, you know, very clever, they tend to be Wi-Fi only. And in my opinion, it's much better, if you can, to get a wired internet connection to your device. So I've got all of these devices.
So that means a box, does it?
Yeah, I would say the box, because then you can use Wi-Fi or wired. And for TV watching, wired is better. You know, just is a more reliable, less likely to stutter, just better all round. So I would not go for a stick. I would go for a box. It depends on what sort of ecosystem you're using. I own pretty much all of these boxes. The one that I use time and time again is the Amazon Fire TV. It just works better. It works better, than, in my opinion, than the Apple box.
And what are we talking when it comes to cost for that?
Not a lot. I think at full price it's about £75.
Okay.
Occasionally they go on offer and drop down to sort of £50-60. But it also depends on where you're going to get the movies from. So if you're, for example, already an Amazon Prime customer, then the Amazon Fire TV box is a no-brainer because you get all the movies as part of that subscription.
Oh, really?
If on the other hand, you're a podcast fanatic and particularly like watching video podcasts, although you can do it on the other one, you can get all your iTunes content up on your TV screen by using an Apple TV box. So that would be a reason to go. If you're a person who likes to fiddle with lots of apps and download lots of apps and players and all the rest of it, then you could look at the Roku box, R-O-K-U. But if for most people, I would say that the Amazon Fire TV box is the best choice.
Wonderful.
And if you don't like it, they'll take it back for 30 days. So I think that's...
Oh, yeah. So you can try before you buy, effectively.
Well, you can buy it and return it free of charge. So, you know, just tell them you don't like it. Tell them it doesn't match your curtains, they'll take it back.
Okay. Colette says, is it possible to retrieve documents after Windows reinstalled on a computer? She says, the local computer shop didn't back up all the documents before doing this and I've lost nearly all of them. I'm laid awake now worrying about this. The computer problem happened within 2 weeks of the external hard drive failing too. Unlucky or what? Oh, Colette, you poor thing.
Yeah, so there is a sort of rule that, and this is not for Colette, because it do you no good for me to say this to you now, but one backup is not a backup. You have to back up your backups and have one of them off-site just in case there's a disaster like fire.
Colette's swearing at the radio now.
Yeah, sorry, Colette. I'm saying that more for the benefit of others. Okay, so... And normally, obviously, you do a backup before you take it in if you get a chance to. That said, whether you can recover those files will depend upon reinstating an operating system in and of itself doesn't necessarily have to render those files unrecoverable. It depends if anything was literally written over that section where the data lived. And it probably will have done, but there are applications such as Get Data Back or Recover, R-E-C-U-V-A, which is a free application that you can download from somewhere like filehippo.com. Those will take a look and see what they can recover, but my advice is try those, download those softwares on another computer and install them on yours, but bear in mind the more you use the computer, the less likely you are to be able to recover any files, because the more likely those areas are to be overwritten on the hard drive. If it was really, really valuable data, then there are professional companies that recover data, but those are expensive. They start in the hundreds of pounds and go into the thousands.
Okay, sorry about that, Colette.
I'm really sorry. You have been unlucky, but you know, just because a file is deleted doesn't mean it's gone. It just means it's a bit like having a book and tearing out the index. The pages are still there. You just need to know where to find the information. And specialist software can get it. However, if it's been overwritten by the operating system or other programs or data, then it is gone.
Maria says, a sort of a similar query, if you like. My laptop is slow and sends error messages. I would like to have it serviced and cleaned up. I feel worried about security if I leave it with a local technician. Do I need to be concerned? The company has been recommended by neighbours.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Maria. I mean, I would like to get my laptop cleaned as well, but I just think... I'm just too frightened of either losing something or them nosing around in something they shouldn't be.
And it does happen, frankly. Yeah. I mean, most repairers are honest and too busy to worry about your personal data. But, you know, you get a range. You've seen a range of cases, everything from people pulling photos up and republishing them and laughing at them with their colleagues and all the rest of it, right through to the full fraud. And I'm not saying that's common, but it does happen, and you're right to have it in your mind. What I would do is pull off anything sensitive, back it up. I'd back up the whole system anyway, but I would then delete off the system anything that could be deemed sensitive. Another way of doing it would be just to back up everything and make sure it's a reliable backup, and then wipe the machine itself and then get them to reinstate it for you. Or do what some people do, is just sit there and watch them. If it's a small sort of retailer that does this service, they'll often allow you just to sit and watch them do it. But if it's a sort of big multiple where it goes in the back and then they tell you to come back in 2 weeks or something, then that's not an option. But you are right to be concerned, and your only real protection is to reliably wipe the data off yourself. But before doing so, make sure you have several backup copies of it. And it's a good time to learn about doing backups and do test recoveries from backups as well. You know, there's a software company called Acronis, A-C-R-O-N-I-S. They do a backup software which is more advanced than the backup that's built into Windows, and that actually allows you to back up onto what's called dissimilar hardware. So you can back up one machine, and then when you buy a new machine, you can actually reinstate everything onto the new machine. It's very clever.
Okay.
But the short answer is the only way to really be sure about that not happening is to take the data off before you hand over the machine.
Okay, we've got a caller waiting, but just to let you know, we've had a tweet from @maybeacoolguy who says Amazon and Sonos are working together to bring Echo and Sonos integration later this year. We were talking about that earlier, so there we go. Let's go to Mike in Suffolk. Mike, we've got about 3 minutes left. I'll be amazed if Fevzi can answer a question in 3 minutes, but we'll try. Go on.
Oh, it's a very simple question. My local
it doesn't matter. Go on.
I'm a very simple guy, you see. My local supermarket is selling a laptop, a Hewlett Packard laptop, HP 240G3. They're selling it for £162. Now, I'm someone who's never had a tablet, a laptop, a smartphone, anything like that. Do you think that would be a reasonable purchase for me as a very first sort of dipping my toe in the waters of modern technology?
Okay, so I don't know the spec of that particular machine. It sounds a little bit too cheap to me, and unless it was a real bargain, and the only way to tell that is to look at the specifications.
Well, apparently they were originally selling it for £200, and they reduced it.
Right, well, still, that's a little bit on the cheap side. So I would, if I was going for a laptop, I'd be trying to look at, you know, the best value I could get out of, say, about £300 or £350. Mm-hmm. And that gives you a bet. If you choose wisely, that means you get a laptop that's going to be more capable from day one and be useful for longer. So the cheaper laptop, I understand, you know, money is an issue always, and you know, it's much nicer to pay half as much, but sometimes it will be too slow.
What about Chromebook? Would that be suitable?
Well, it's possibly a Chromebook. I mean, that's something I'd need to just look up what that machine actually is. Chromebooks are much easier for people to use because you don't have to maintain the software up to date. You know, Google do it for you, but they are limited. Not everything will run on that. So for people who want to use Windows applications, you can't use Windows applications on a Chromebook. You have to run everything effectively through the Chrome browser, which is what, you know, the Chrome operating system is. So the benefit is you don't have to worry about, you know, maintaining the software. Is your operating system up to date? Are the apps up to date? Because they all run what's called server side on the servers of the providers. The downside is it's not as powerful, and it pretty well needs an internet connection to be useful as well. They do have some basic functionality without internet connection. My advice would be to go for a £300-£350 Windows 10 laptop. Make sure that it's got 8 gig of RAM, and ideally, if you can run to it, has got a solid state drive in it. That will make it much faster to use, more pleasurable to use, and will last you more years. So you may find that machine either doesn't do the job today or just ceases to be useful within, you know, a couple of years.
So you
want it to last a bit longer than that. But what I would do, if you give me that model number again, I'll look it up and tweet out what I find about it. We'll see HP
240G3.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'll take a look at that, and I'll stick it up on Twitter later.
Okay, thank you.
Brilliant, Mike. Thank you so much for your call. That's Mike in Suffolk. We had a call earlier from Peter in East Sussex. He's been on to say he's downloaded VLC and it's working perfectly.
Oh, good.
There you go.
There's some feedback. That's nice.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. I love having you on the programme and I love your detailed answers. You do know I'm only joking.
I do, and I take no notice.
Good, good, good. Thank you so much. We will talk to you again soon. Thank you for all your calls. Thank you for all your texts. I hope that we've been, well, when I say we've been of some help, you know who I mean. We hope that Fevzy has been of some help. So thank you very much.